So the next talk by Eduard Druser is about making the CRMX kernel internals look. So please enjoy.
Hello. Thank you for the introduction. Today I will be talking about what happens if you decide that working with your data structures in a convenient way is simply too boring. The agenda of this talk is, first one, I will talk about what was actually the trigger to study all this. Then we will briefly talk about the land of the lock-free, because a lot of this is actually inspired in the land of the lock-free. And then I will outline the solution. If the time permits, I will also mention news in the CMRX kernel since the last FOSDEM. Okay, so let's start. What was the problem which made me to think about this? The CMRX kernel does its best to make life inside the interrupt service handler as hard as possible. The reason for this is that we run on very limited hardware, where there is a rule that interrupt service handler has to run in kernel mode or in supervisor mode. So it essentially has kernel privileges, and it can do a lot of bad stuff. So we only allow two calls to kernel. So you are very motivated to defer your work to into user space. But despite this, you still can, via these two calls, modify pretty much every data structure that is there. And while it's done from interrupt context, you have to somehow guard how to do, eliminate concurrent modification, so still the things remain consistent. You can't use mutexes, because if you log mutex and you get interrupt, it's instant deadlock. What kernels do is they disable interrupts. As I said, it's safe, it's good, but it's boring, and it introduces a lot of latency and also jitter if the thing you do with the interrupts disabled varies in time. So I've been thinking how to avoid this. And I did some investigation. First, I investigated how other kernels do it. And I realized that many RTOSs simply lock, disable interrupts, and call it a day. Then I have a couple of friends, and we have board game evenings with them. And at one of these board game evenings, I mentioned this problem, the constraints, and what I want to achieve. And one of them told me, you know, this sounds a lot like you need a lock-free approach. Okay. So I started studying lock-free algorithms. I already knew some very basics of lock-free, and I guess you also know. Like, for example, the case of single producer, single consumer queue. That thing can run without mutexes. And it's inherently thread safe, because it's a lock-free data structure in this one specific case. Unfortunately, it cannot be used here. So I've been searching for some other solution. And while it was right around the time when LLMs became very popular, I asked ChatGPT, okay, show me some experience which satisfies these conditions. And it came with roughly the similar, very similar code to this. And what this code essentially does is that it creates a local copy of shared data under mutex. But this is a O1 action, basically. Then does a modification on the local copy, and then commits it into the shared data, which satisfies all my criteria, except of one. It has a lot of overhead. And it also looks quite a lot like database transaction, because you have read, modify, and commit stage. Therefore, I decided I will use this concept general, but I will make it lightweight. Now, a bit about the lock-free programming, what it is actually. A lot of people think that if you have lock-free programming, it means that you are completely free of any locking and nothing in the system ever gets blocked. Well, that's not true. The definition of lock-free is that at least one execution context does not block. And here in this specific case, when we are talking kernel versus interrupt, this context which you don't want to interrupt is the interrupt service handler. So what we want to achieve here is essentially a fast lane for interrupts, which kind of allows us to cheat. If you find this guarantee that you only have one context which has fast lane too boring, then there for you there's a wait-free programming, which actually does the part that nobody uses locks and nobody also gets blocked. But that's a lot more complicated stuff, and you get a lot more overhead, which is actually the reason why not everything is lock-free, because lock-free comes with a lot of baseline overhead, which kinda gets paid for if you do massive concurrency, where the overhead of locking is much higher than baseline overhead of lock-free algorithms. Now, when we know roughly what the lock-free is, and we know that the baseline idea was something like transactions, let's look to how the transacted part of kernel looks like compared to standard critical section. The thing on the left is a critical section modeled by mutexes. So at the beginning of the access of shared data, you log a mutex, or in kernel, it could be you disable interrupts. Then you find what you want to modify, and then you modify it. And once you are done, you re-enable interrupts. What transaction this does is that at the beginning, you open the transaction. This is a read-only action. Then you find the entry which you want to modify. This is not an exclusive action. You can be raised by someone else, both opening transaction and accessing the data. Then you try to commit this transaction, and you specify that you are modifying the data, that you are going to modify the data. And this transaction may either pass or fail. If it passes, then you get exclusive access to this data and you can modify it. If it fails, you shall not modify it because you will break the contract. And then once you are done modifying it, you call the X, and then you signalize you are done modifying the data. So the difference is that the critical section runs exclusively the whole time. A transaction only runs exclusively for the time you are modifying the entry. It gets even more interesting if we consider the read-only case, because this is a read-write case. So, if you read some non-atomic data from shared data storage in concurrent system, you also use critical section to get the data in consistent state. With transactions, you perform the whole data access in a shared state, so you can be raised. And you can be raised even by someone who will modify the data. And the question is, okay, why would you do that if you have synchronization primitive, which doesn't actually guarantee consistency of the data? Well, it doesn't guarantee you that nobody will modify the data structure, but at least if you survive it, it will tell you that it was modified. And at the beginning, I mentioned that transaction start is a read-only operation. And this read-only transaction has a nice feature that as a wall, it is a read-only operation, including the overhead of transaction subsystem. And that means that readers don't block each other. Readers don't block writers. And if you write something which someone else is trying to read in between, readers will know that the data has been modified. And also there's if, which means that you can choose how you react to the event that you've been raised by someone else. Okay, to detail a bit about the transactions. What do you usually know as a transaction? Is an ACID compliance transaction from database systems. These transactions provide a serialization isolation level. So you can essentially take a list of transactions, replay them in the same order, and you get the same state each time, which is actually used by database systems to do catastrophic recovery. And this level of isolation is nice for databases, but a bit of an overkill here, because we would have to do the copy from shared to local, modify, and then commit. And you also have to provide some temporary storage. Like, and for microkernel running on microcontroller, that's not really viable. And I believe it's not really viable for any microkernel anywhere, because that gets really high level of overhead. But there are other lower separation levels. And one of them is so-called read committed. In this separation level, all readers only see the data which was committed by someone else. And it turns out that this is just enough separation level you need to live in kernel in this weird partially synchronized or partially consistent state. And therefore, if you run Unicore, this framework offers you this separation level, which means that the data structures as a wall, if you take some hash table or let's say scheduling table, they may develop some unusual properties. Like you have two threads running on the same core at the same time. But the entry for individual thread is consistent. Then, as I mentioned, the fact that read-only transactions are purely read-only actions as a wall, they don't block each other. And you only pay for the overhead of transactions once you get contention. And for sake of terminology, if a transaction, if you commit a read-write transaction, it will invalidate any other transaction which is in flight. So it was opened, but wasn't committed yet. And when transaction is invalidated, it will fail to commit. Read-only transactions don't invalidate anything, which is the point of non-blocking each other. So, now, it isn't all roses, of course. While this is all based on lock-free, we are essentially trading blocking for iteration. So when you get contention, the thing you probably want to do is retry. But there are cases, as I mentioned, you are free to decide what to do. And there is one case, it is actually the first case where we implemented this, and it's scheduler. Because it may happen that you have normal scheduler run, so we are deciding the next thread, and then interrupts comes, which changes the state of threads, and it fires another scheduler run, and they run concurrent, one on top of another. And in this case, what happens is that the scheduler from interrupt changes state of thread table, decides new thread, sets it, and returns. Then kernel finishes, and his transaction for scheduler fails. So what does it do? It gives up, because someone else already did scheduling for it. That's a nice feature for the interesting properties. It means that your algorithms have to be resilient. You have to, you cannot assume that there will be only one max value in something which has unique values, which is still good if you are running uniprocessor, because there's this read-committed separation. So like internals of the data entry itself will be consistent, because whoever raised you did the change atomically because interrupts were disabled. But it gets very funny when you switch to multi-core, because there this assumption doesn't hold anymore. While interrupts are disabled on one core, someone else may read on another core, which also leads to another problem, which is actually next slide. That as it is implemented right now, it only works in Unicore setups, because currently we commit the transaction at the beginning when you call a transaction commit. And there's, if you were running multi-core, there would be an ambiguity that if anyone opens transaction while you are inside commit, which is technically possible, you couldn't say if you have to abort this transaction or not, as an effect of the transaction which is currently being committed. And there are two possible solutions to this. Synchronize opening transactions, starting transactions with commit. Well, it will remove the feature that your read-only transactions are read-only operations. But it's the safer way, because you get the synchronization and it's clear. And another option is that we will mark the transaction as committed, or the internal synchronization point will be marked at the end of commit, at the point when you call transaction done, which also provides the synchronization, but you don't need to use mutexes. So this is the next update which will be done. Maybe why to consider transactions? Maybe you think that this must be like crazy complicated framework. Actually, it's like 95 lines including comments. And the memory overhead is like you need one field to remember which was the last committed transaction ID. So it's really trivial. And as long as your data structures and your algorithms can survive this violent, inconsistent internal state, you may benefit from it. I don't know what will be the general performance of this for two reasons. Cymex kernel case is kind of specific. Our kernel is designed that many actions which we transacted have quite long phase where they are finding the entry to modify. Like we are searching, okay, you want to change thread state. So search for thread takes some time. It's not a one operation, and then you change one flag, which is one operation. It's a one. Your mileage may vary if you use different code organization. And then, which we don't know yet also, is how funny it will become when we go multi-core, because there's a lot of unknowns, which I cannot predict what will happen, what synchronization problems will pop up. Okay, and we have some time, so let me to list out some news in the kernel. Kernel itself got support for FPU, which is nice because we can use more performance. Mutexes were moved out completely into user space for the happy part. The thing you are watching right now is actually running inside CMRX. So it's not a presentation, it's an actual application running on actual operating system, running on top of Linux. It's not emulation. We are using Linux as a hardware platform. Another platform which was added is ARMv8, and community is slowly growing with more ports coming, namely RISC-V port, which is contributed by another guy. So thank you. Are there any questions? Question? Depends on who you ask. If you ask something from academic sphere, they will tell you yes. If you ask someone from the field, they will tell you yes, but if you survive it, you will be told that it was you went through the field of undefined circumstances, so you should probably throw the result away. And it's up to you to decide what you actually do. Because you may say, okay, whatever I computed is a garbage, but the conditions which led to this garbage, which you actually control in the application, because you decide the transaction domain, who is using it, what is the semantics of the data you cover by transaction, like in the scheduler case, it may mean, okay, someone did it for me, so I just give up.
Have you looked into read copy update? Because that's a scheme that sort of should provide you with similar properties, like readers not being synchronized among each other, writers not being blocked by the readers, readers not being blocked by the writers. And I would say the main difference is that compared to transactions where you have to tolerate failed transactions, in a read copy update you have to tolerate that the readers might see stale data sometimes. So would that serve you well or not, and if not, why?
Okay, the question was if I check the read copy update, I think it's from Linux but Linux is it. The answer is I haven't, because somehow when doing my research it led me to some obscure mechanism for very specific situations, and then I switched to lock-free, so I skipped this. But
it's lock-free as well. It's a different approach to the same problem, and you have different trade-offs on this.
Yeah. So, no, I haven't studied, but you are actually the second person who mentioned it, so I will definitely study it. In the fourth row? Yep.
Thank you for the talk. When you say, like, lock-free, especially, like, you introduce what I would call, like, transactional memory, or software transactional memory in the kernel. And when you talk about lock-free, you talk about the commit process. That was not really clear. Sorry, I apologize. If it was not clear. clear if you're talking about the commit process being lock-free or something else.
Yeah, so like it's not completely lock-free. It's inspired by lock-free. And you actually have the you have good point. And the question was if it is lock-free, if it actually locks, right? Kind of. And the truth is that it actually, you know, when you go multi-core, this locking will actually be quite useless because another core can bypass you unless you do inter-process signaling and lock everything down. And when you are resilient enough to survive the hell before the commit, then you actually don't need to lock.
I think I'll just suggest that you take a look at the like, software transactional memory.
I think that we are out of time, so,
oh, yes.
So we'll take questions outside. Thank you.
Thank you.